Welcome to a new episode of So What Else. I'm joined today by my friends at Geeks with Shields, Ulrich and Axel are here. How are you guys?
Doing pretty well. I'm going to cut right in front of Ulrich just because we can't see each other right now and I can't go off of physical body cues. Anyway.
Right.
So yeah, I'm Axel Wright. It's Lord Commander Ulrich, my co-host. And yeah, we are super happy to be here. There's particularly, I'm not going to cut you off, but I'll just say it, there's a topic that we've wanted to talk about, but we had couldn't find a way to really talk about it on our show. And then Seth there was like, hey, I want to talk about this thing. We were like, hey, can we talk with you about it? Boom, we're here.
And it's perfect pairing too, because on our other Jaguar Sharks show, To Whatever's Way Up, we just discussed Boba Fett. So if you want to hear my thoughts, you can check it out there. I'm not going to regale too much here, but I'm very interested in what you guys were thinking. Let's start with Ulrich. What was your Boba Fett experience like?
I feel like I trended more positive than everyone else online. Like, I'm one of the people, I don't give two shits about Boba Fett, but I love Tamara Morrison, so I was really excited to see him get to come back.
Yeah, yeah.
And this, like, it wasn't great, but it was enjoyable, and I think it's because it felt like a really good Star Wars RPG. Like, you're building your base, like, every episode, like, okay, and now you get this for your base, and now you get this for your base, and okay, go do this mission. I don't know if they've ever really coalesced.
Well, every episode but one feels like that. Anyway.
Yeah, and it feels like it's just part of a bigger mess that is Star Wars, and I really hope they get a season two with a bit more breathing room to kind of, you know, play around with some of the ideas they had.
Sure. Yeah, the video game nature was something I was noting the whole way through, because I was like, damn, I really wish they would have given this to us as a game.
I want to get a Rancor.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Army of Two, I don't know if you guys ever played that when it came out years ago. But that, like, co-op game style where you can play as, you know, Boba Fett or Jin Jaren or whatever his name is, the Mandalorian, something along those lines, I think all of this would have fit into that, you know, kind of space. I really enjoyed that, too, because it helped me keep track of where we were at in the show, which is an issue that I have without recaps, because my memory is shit. Axel, you are just recently caught up on it. You were kind of behind everyone else. So what was your experience like?
Yeah, so real quick, what Seth means by that is I had watched probably the first five episodes of The Mandalorian. And then about a month ago, Ulrich told me, hey, we're going to do this thing. We're going to talk Star Wars with on Montressor Media. And we have to you have to see all of Boba Fett. And that means all Mandalorian, too. So I was like, ah, crap, okay. And so I made it a thing where I tried to watch an episode a day or two episodes a day, and I can't even do every day because, like, I can't do it on weekends, and I can't do it on, like, one day a week. So it was really just, like, 4 days a week, and I just managed to, like, I had to watch three episodes yesterday to finally get all the way through. And I will admit, being forced to watch it like that kind of hurt my experience, but that's no one's fault, but... It's really no one's fault. That's just reality's fault, I guess, for how time works. So, because there were plenty of days where, like, I was in a really terrible mood. I was like, well, now I have to watch this thing, get it out of the way, and probably didn't, you know, help or anything. But
sure,
I'm going to do my best to keep those feelings separate from my feelings in the actual shows. And we're talking Boba Fett specifically, then I will say that my feelings are... I know what I'm about to say is a little inflammatory, and I feel like some people will take it as a harsh criticism when it's not. It's more like an encompassing criticism. I feel the same way about Book of Boba Fett that I do about the Arrowverse CW stuff.
Oh, wow. I'm glad we're doing this not on our podcast.
Particularly Arrow Season 4 on, like Flash Season 2 or 3, Arrow Season 4, Legends of Tomorrow, that area of show.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, and this kind of solidified around the episode, that there's the best episode of Boba Fett, honestly, is not an episode of Boba Fett. It's the episode where the Mandalorian shows up, and it's just him. And that's sad, honestly. Not that I don't love the Mandalorian, but that's exactly why. How come the best episode of this show is the one that's actually an episode of the other show?
I can answer that.
Bryce Dallas Howard is a big part of that. She's been crushing it on these shows.
Yeah.
what's your alternative answer there, Ulrich?
Well, hold on, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure.
Just to kind of cap what I'm saying. When that happened, there was this thing that was always been a joke in Star Wars as a media, which is that for a galaxy far, far away, it's insanely small. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the jokes always were, it's keeping up with the Skywalkers. And The Mandalorian had gotten away from that in a lot of ways. Like, just the introduction of a bunch of characters, like, you know, Cobb Vance and Crazy Mechanic Lady, who I adore, and just, like, all the stuff that had nothing to do with it. And then, by the way, spoilers for The Mandalorian, if you're listening to this, I don't know. But, like, the Luke stuff that happened at the end was cool and made sense, but I did totally understand people's criticism that's like, all right, you're making it feel small again. And Boba Fett does that way kind of worse, and it gets to that feel like, I know it's a small thing, but the fact that Jabba's palace is a main setting of this show but always feels empty, like there's three people in the place. Just
I have thoughts on that too.
Yeah, but it made me feel like I know that what the show is probably trying to convey is, oh, Boba's doesn't have people yet, he's working from the ground up, but what it felt like is, we don't have money for a lot of people, so here's a few people to put in this setting. So, and those are the kind of feelings I got that reminded me of the Arrowverse, where it's like there are these big ideas and there's a lot of kind of soap opera-y drama that works sometimes and doesn't work other times, and they're playing with a lot of big, like, toys, but at the same time, you know, sometimes the lack of money just shows, especially in choreography, where sometimes choreography is amazing and other times it's not. So,
right, yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I could go into more details, but this is kind of what I mean where I'm saying it's an all-encompassing criticism. I'm not saying it as a highly negative thing, because I actually have a lot of positive feelings about the Arrowverse, but I'm saying that it feels like the same kind of thing, especially in its interactions with the Mandalorian. So
yeah, definitely. I tweeted something that's, I think, within the same family of this idea about, like, as much as I enjoyed the show, because I really did. I really enjoyed Book of Boba Fett. I've really enjoyed The Mandalorian, and I've enjoyed them despite their warts, and sometimes because of them. But something that's really been killing me is we keep going back to Tatooine.
Yes.
And
sorry.
I think
yeah, I think mean, one you, of my you tweets know, that you saw, because for anyone who doesn't know, I was tweeting out my thoughts while watching this, and I think one of my tweets in The Mandalorian was something like, back to Tatooine, are there any other planets in this fucking galaxy?
Yeah, because, like, the Phantom Menace makes a great effort to go out of its way to be like, anybody who would end up here is just stuck forever. We need to get the fuck out of here as fast as possible. Because George Lucas understands the metaphor of Tatooine is growing up in an Arizona suburb. You know what I mean? It's just, it's arid and it's hot and it's dry and there's nothing the fuck to do. Get out of town. And the fact that we keep coming back to it just for notoriety for fans really irks me, because it's like,
Were you part? Someone on my Twitter feed posted something that was like, Arrakis versus Tatooine, go, or something. And and I didn't see anyone else saying this, so I pointed out that comparing them is not fair because they serve two completely different metaphorical purposes.
Yes.
Tatooine,
yes,
as you just said, is supposed to be the boonies. It is the middle of nowhere. It's supposed to not be important. In fact, the fact of its non-importance is what makes Luke's hero's journey, it's part of what makes that work, because he's supposed to be an everyman who comes from nothing. That message gets muddied when his lineage gets revealed, but you know, in the original Star Wars, this is the idea. He's just a kid from the middle of nowhere. Whereas Arrakis was on purpose the center of the universe, essentially. So.
Right. And like, this is my heel turn, too, because as much as I levy that criticism, I also kind of love it because there's a metatextual thing happening there of the fact that it's Boba Fett, the guy with two lines that was a cool costume and nothing else, is getting his own show, and he gets just thrown into the suburbs because that's where boring costume people go. I love that. Like, that instantly brought me back around to, like, okay, well, I mean, if we're here, let's have some fun, right? And the fuck, we have fun. Like, it ends up being very, very fun. So that's, like, I'm kind of in love with the warts of it. Like, I'm seeing strong film criticism, but I'm also, like, loving it. Ulrich, earlier you had brought up the reason why that Mandalorian episode stood out. Did you want to finish that thought?
Yeah, and it kind of ties into my grand theory of what is wrong with Star Wars right now, in that Mandalorian is allowed to be its own unique thing in the Star Wars universe. It's allowed to have lesser known characters. It's allowed to have new characters. It's allowed to set things up.
So, in season one.
Yeah, well, season two, even then, we're just kind of like, we're doing a bit of show spinoff, but this is still him being his own character, having his own adventures.
Yeah, but it's easy to argue that season two's addition of things like, you know, Ahsoka and the Mandalorian lady and a bunch of stuff from Clone Wars, which makes sense. The creators were apparently the same creators of Clone Wars. I get it, but
yeah,
just saying that stuff started happening.
I'll circle back for that.
Yeah,
I will circle because that is part of my grand thesis.
Go ahead.
So, Boba gets to have and go and do fun adventures and do his own cool fun thing.
Mando, you mean, right?
Yes, sorry. Okay. Now I'm going to mix the two up. They're guys in helmets. I've been drinking. Anyways, Boba Fett is kind of the linchpin of this looking back at Star Wars problem. It has to reference the original trilogy. It has to go back to the places we saw in the original trilogy. The worst looking back that Mando does in season two is it looks at stuff in Clone Wars, which is a whole other generation's experience to Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
So at least it's playing around in something that hasn't been done to death. And that's where I think Boba Fett kind of has it. It's where Star Wars is at. Even the new trilogy is looking back at the original trilogy. It's the Empire again. It's Stormtroopers again. It's the thing we already saw.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where Star Wars is at. Is it so afraid to play with any of the stuff that's been built in the last 20 years? Because, oh no, the fans have spent the last 20 years bitching about the prequels. Can't touch them. Holy text is the original. That it's getting iterative, very iterative, which is why Mando worked is like, okay, this is all, it's referencing to stuff we know, but only in kind of set dressing.
Exactly. Well, and Mando takes it the step further of, especially in season two, and saying like, "We need to show you all these other planets.
Yes.
We're not going to revisit
here's
anything."
New races, here's new starships. Here's new everything. And the worst thing it does is it brings back Luke at the very end, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, can we not go 5 minutes without a Skywalker?"
I mean, admittedly, I will say, admittedly, that one does work fine for me, because the idea that Grogu called out to the Force, of course, who was going to hear that call?
Like, it could have been Plo Koon, and I could have been happy.
Yeah, I'm just saying that in that case, I will say, though, I'm definitely on board the Twitter campaign of just cast Sebastian Stan and stop with this deepfake stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, oh my god, really, for real. I mean, Disney owns his ass, just like, why not?
Yeah, well, plus, I heard, I didn't verify, but I heard that when Luke shows up in Boba Fett, Mark Hamill wasn't even involved in that part at all.
Yeah,
they
digitally
recreate his voice.
Yeah, they compiled audio files to make a fake Luke Hamill.
Well, you know what? It shows, because, okay, visually it's never looked better, but his voice was off the entire time, and I was like, Mark Hamill is one of the best voice actors currently working today. This is not Mark Hamill's fault. So,
voice actors have been shit on tremendously in the last 6 months, and I don't know what's happening. I'm not here for it.
Yeah, I will not hear a word spoken against Mark Hamill's voice acting career. So, good. So,
that's been the big thing, is the voice actors are kind of piping up going, listen, you need us. We create the characters. We deserve to be paid the same as the actors.
Well, there's whole Futurama fiasco happening right now.
Yes.
But anyway, another conversation. My point is that when you can obviously tell that the digital recreation is good, but it's hitting Uncanny Valley, and with a character like Luke, and you've got an actor who looks uncannily similar to young Mark Hamill, who's already on your payroll, and who we know is a good actor, there's no excuse. There really is an excuse.
Well, and this, I think, is exactly, like, we're and that's why this episode is called The State of Star Wars. This is exactly what we're talking about, because it's that adherence to the holy text of the original trilogy, like Ulrich was saying, that they can't even consider the idea that fans would just get on board with a little bit of a different performance, a little bit of a different voice, a little bit of a different face, but put him in the hair and the costume and the lightsaber, and I'm fucking on board. But they have to, like, adhere to it so, like, grandiosely, and that's a huge underlying problem.
It's weird.
It trickles in every aspect of how they make their movies.
It's funny. I think part of it, and I hate bringing this up, but I bet part of it is because, like, my brain instantly went to, you've already done it before. You did it with Solo. And then I remembered, well, Solo was, like, the lowest performing
Yeah, Solo really made them gun shy about doing anything different.
Because honestly, Solo's problems had nothing to do with that actor playing Han Solo. So
no, yeah, he was actually a highlight of the movie.
He was fine. I mean, he was outshone entirely by Lando in that movie. But that's another.
Come on now,
and that's why Lando should be the sequel.
Yes. Yeah. That well, they shouldn't have done that. Again, that's back to only going back to the holy text of no one cared about what Han Solo was doing before A New Hope. What Lando was up to. Okay, that could be interesting. We all love Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah.
And he his introduction into Star Wars is a heel turn. Like that his opening line is like hateful towards Han Solo, and then he spins it and he's happy again. That's the most interesting way to introduce a character, and I instantly want to know more about him. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, but one thing you said, Ulrich, you were talking about, you know, with this adherence, right, and how Mando kind of is getting away from it, but Boba isn't. What makes that even more interesting is the fact that in Mando's episode that is just him, the centerpiece of the episode is a Phantom Menace Naboo starfighter, and they go to great lengths to make this thing really cool, and like it's a hot rod, and it's one of those kind of things where, like, all right, this is an adherence to a mythology, but it's a prequel mythology, and we're doing it in a way that is really cool. I don't know how to get a,
People,
you know,
people loved it because it went, hey, people that like parts of the prequels, look at this cool stuff, and people went, oh yeah, the Naboo starfighters were awesome, the pod race was awesome, this isn't an X-wing again, thank God,
right. And like the retrofitting it so little Grogu can sit up in the droid compartment. Are you kidding me? Like, it felt designed for that. Yeah.
And even the simple thing of just getting rid of the gaudy color. Don't get me wrong. I like actually the visual aesthetics of the prequels. I like how bright and colorful they are. But the Mandalorian is a character in gunmetal gray. So so his ship should be gunmetal gray.
Right. Yeah, I'm very curious, like, why... I tweeted something out earlier today along these lines, because obviously, you know, I've been doing my prep work in preparation for this, and we did a very long episode on Rise of Skywalker when that came out, and we really torpedoed it. And
deservedly.
Yeah, I'd like to double...
I'm a person who is super into Last Jedi, and Rise of Skywalker just makes me angrier the more time goes by. So, anyway.
I don't like any of the new trilogy.
That's fine. And you're allowed to have that. I'm just saying that I think we can... Like, both sides of the Last Jedi discussion can get on board with, well, Rise of Skywalker fucked the pooch entirely. So...
Yeah. All Star Wars fans can agree. The Rise of Skywalker, not the one. But, like, the... Something about it... As I go into the... Like, researching what Colin Trevorrow was going to do with his version... that adherence is not there in a lot of it. And it's a lot of references back to the Clone Wars and the original or the prequel trilogy. And like he really tried to unify what Star Wars had been up to that point. And I think it was that more than anything that pushed him out of that role was just like he was so invested into making sure that all of Star Wars felt spoken for and the universe was a universe and they were just like, it's not enough Skywalker. You know what I mean? We need to, we have to hyper focus on these two characters who have not changed very much in the last three movies.
Which is funny. Cause I do feel like with all this being said, as Ulrich pointed out, we are getting essentially new generations of filmmakers whose their relationship to Star Wars is based on different media. Like, I was not a big fan of Clone Wars, but not for any reason other than I just didn't see it. Like, I saw some episodes. I remember, I have a vivid memory of the one of General Grievous just hunting down Jedi, but that's about it. So, like, I had no connection to Cad Bane, but I didn't need a connection to be like, that guy's cool. He's got a good, the bad, the ugly thing going on. It's awesome.
So, here's the thing with Cad Bane. I actually really enjoy Clone Wars. That's some of my favorite Star Wars stuff. Not a fan of Cad Bane. Like, I never really appreciated him. But I just fist bumped the air when I saw it. Like, yeah, Cad Bane's in this. Okay. Because it's a new character. And I didn't realize how starved I was for someone that wasn't in the original trilogy. There's and whole cloth made from Star Wars in the last decade.
And that's what I mean, is that I think even with this heavy adherence, the fact that we are getting more of this rolled in, people wanted Ahsoka for a long time. I admit, I just heard the name Thrawn and lost my damn mind. So, so like, we are getting that. There is movement in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, and this is part of the growing pains, I think, of any IP, especially of this nature that is, like, based on lots and lots of characters. I really hope that they're able to kind of skirt into multiple different venues like this. Like, I'm enjoying the show so far. I'm hoping they're not quite as samey. And maybe this is me, like, seeing the same thing that Axel was talking about with the CW stuff, that, like, all of that is very samey. It all looks like it's made on exactly the same sets with exactly the same equipment and shot, you know, like they have like a bullet list of how to shoot the episodes.
So, I was listening to a review for Peacemaker season one that compared how James Gunn treated that versus how Disney is treating a lot of their projects. And Peacemaker feels like it is part of the DC universe, but it's not. It's its own piece. It gets to do its own thing. Whereas a lot of the Star Wars stuff feels like, no, you have to adhere to, these are the rules of Star Wars.
Yeah.
You must not adhere outside it. And Marvel shows kind of waffle in and out of that, with WandaVision really being its own thing, but like Falcon Winter Soldier feeling very much of the greater universe.
And Loki rides an interesting line in between the two ideas. But
Yeah.
But it's very much like the differentiating style. Like, Peacemakers are very like, let's just see what we can do. And very much Disney's Star Wars feels like, all right, let's build something instead of just letting it be a thing, which is where Mando works best, is when Mando is just playing around in the Star Wars universe. Same thing with Boba Fett. When it's just having fun being in Star Wars, it's doing great. When it's having to do callbacks and, you know, ride the line of what a Star Wars is, that's when it's weakest.
The funniest thing about that, though, is that even that idea can't be properly conveyed, because part of what makes Mandalorian good when it's really good is that it is heavily, heavily homaging samurai flicks specifically, which are themselves the inspiration for the spaghetti westerns that it's also heavily referencing. I mean, the fact that we've got Cobb Vanth and everything to do with his character being... But anyway, so the fact is that Mando is not being slavishly devoted to the aesthetic surface level aspects of Star Wars, but it's tapping into the root, probably like what George Lucas was actually thinking and feeling when he wrote Star Wars. So, well,
and you see that with the fact that every episode in each season is a different genre of presentation. Like, you have episodes like Sanctuary, where we turn AT-ST walkers into Tyrannosaurus Rexes, and that shit is, it's scary and awesome. Or like The Passenger, ice spiders, just nothing to do the fuck with Star Wars, it's except for, hey, well, we're in this universe, and what would horror look like here? Like, the fact that it can give us those things is so much more exciting for me. And that's not to say I don't also love the repetitive, you know, kind of street beat thing of Book of Boba Fett. It's just a lot less of what really excites me. But then it's also making up for that by having, like, you know, Machete in space and riding a course.
That's right. I saw Danny Trejo and I went, whoa!
Yeah,
that was cool.
Dude, but Rodriguez got Machete to space, and that's, he can die happy. You know what I mean? He accomplished his goal.
I mean, every time I saw director Robert Rodriguez, I literally was like, that makes sense for this one. So
Yep.
I will say,
Rodriguez, I would argue, did the best episode of season two of Mando, which is the war movie.
The war movie. Which one was that?
That's where all the clone troopers land to try and take Boba Fett, and Mando and Boba just sit there blowing
up. Oh, yeah.
And it feels the like tragedy. Private Ryan.
That's the tragedy. Because that's where we got to see Boba Fett's knee rockets.
Which I love the knee gun. That is the best old man tech ever.
And he uses them twice in his own show. I love that.
Can I say another thing that I really am hesitant to bring this up because I feel like it can be super easily misinterpreted. But I think another big problem with Book of Boba Fett, you've created a situation, a show built around this character whose defining traits in the original, if we ignore the fact that he had literally six lines, was that he was a ruthless bounty hunter, right?
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about this one. Okay.
Yeah, I'd say keyword, ruthless. Now, yes, he goes through a Dances with Tusken storyline here in Book of Boba Fett. But,
yes, he does.
But when he takes over as crime lord, the feeling is that this doesn't feel, at least to me, at all like the same character. And they don't really put in the work, I feel like, to justify this level of different character. I read AV Club's review talking about how if they had introduced Cad Bane earlier, then we could have had this push-pull, especially because I read that Cad Bane actually trained Boba. I don't know his storyline, but you could have done a lot with that if that's the case. So, but the hypothesis they had, and I'm inclined to believe, is that this is still a Disney show. This is still a show that shows up on the Disney network, and so they want their protagonist to be, to some degree, a likable guy. When yeah. I was essentially going in thinking a show called Book of Boba Fett, where the premise is Boba Fett takes over for Jabba the Hutt, was essentially going to be The Sopranos, right?
Yeah, very much felt like the whole time they were holding back. And I got shit on Twitter because Marvel or Disney is getting the rights to all the Netflix shows back. And it was like, oh, they're going to put on Disney Plus. I said, there's no way in hell they are going to put Jessica Jones on Disney Plus.
Exactly.
They won't let Mando have blood. Like, there are so many scenes where Mando is shooting and stabbing people, but there's no blood. So, no, Jessica Jones is not getting on Disney Plus. Which is weird because Mando, they had some very, it felt kind of gritty and gross without being gritty and gross. I mean, the first episode has a guy bisected by an iris door, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then this one feels like, No, Boba Fett. No being mean. You need to be nice. It's kind of like, you know...
That's what I mean, where like it's very easy to misinterpret because I'm not saying like, oh, I need gritty real... Because I hate that kind of argument.
It feels like
he
constantly had kitty gloves forced on him. Like, no, you can't be a crime lord. It's like, listen, even if you just took over for the Hutts, you kind of got to be a bit of a dick here if you want this to work.
Exactly. Like, I admit, I'm glad that I wasn't right, but the second that Boba Fett met the street punks, I literally tweet out something like, oh, just kill these street punks already.
I know. My old man brain was like, goddamn kids.
Yeah, but I want Boba Fett, at least my initial thought, right, is Boba Fett is, if he's a crime lord, act like a damn crime lord.
Yeah. And it's a weird thing of the Disney live action is like, I mean, people make jokes about the kind of gritty stuff they get up to in the animated stuff. But they do some really inappropriate for kids show stuff in Clone Wars, Bad Batch, and Rebels. I mean, my favorite moment of Clone Wars is they are fighting with flamethrowers, and they had a crackling sound effect after they torched some people.
Wow!
And it's a kids show. It's like, okay, you can slip a lot under the radar, especially in streaming. Can we just take a little bit of that here? And it feels like they are playing so safe with this.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like I only have that complaint because of how they've created or how they've structured the show around. Boba Fett and Fennec are literally a bounty hunter and an assassin. And yeah, I guess that the meta text is that they're kind of like going legit and becoming protectors. But I already literally have that with The Mandalorian, where it's a bounty hunter becomes a samurai dad, essentially. So this show was supposed to be, all right, now let's look at the more hardcore crime element, and that just didn't get that, just got more of the same. Yeah. And that's the Arrowverse problem coming in again.
Well, like, that's the problem with this show, is what is its identity? What is it going to be? Which is, I think, the problem with Star Wars live action in the greater whole, is what story are you telling?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited for Obi-Wan, and I'm excited for the Andor series. But Obi-Wan, like, what story are you going to tell? How is this going to be different from what you've done?
I think Obi-Wan's a bit of an exception to a lot of what we're saying, because Obi-Wan specifically is the character in the show that I kind of want to play in the same the same sandbox. Like,
I'm excited for it because they're like, rumored they're going to do a lot of Clone War flashbacks. They're going to do a little bit, you know, him dealing with all the trauma of murdering his best friend violently. They're going to get some high drama stakes, and I hope they do that because that would be something that they're not doing with other Star Wars projects.
Anyway, yeah. Anyway, Seth, we've said a lot. What do you have to say about what we're saying?
No, yeah, I'm tracking right along with you here. I actually wanted to rewind a little bit what you were saying about Boba Fett's character and how he's being portrayed, because this is a big part of like the. Not the toxic fandom. The Star Wars fandom is kind of a messy Venn diagram to me.
Yeah, there's a reason why we don't talk Star Wars in our podcast.
Right. And I'm happy to do it here because, you know, it's long form and I have the chance to like say things with a little nuance. But what you were saying is something that I had thought initially when I started watching the show, because I was trying to figure out, like, yeah, what is Boba Fett's character? And like you said, ruthless bounty hunter trying to go straight. Cool, I get that. The reason he does that is because of living with the sand people. That makes sense. Like, this is logical, emotional plot progress. But I figured out why it feels weird and safe and off. And it's because he's playing Jango Fett, not Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Now, Boba that Fett, I buy entirely.
Boba Fett doesn't really exist as a character. Now, like, and that's coming from a person who's not invested into the animated stuff. So, like, Dave Filoni stuff, I'm sure he knocked it out of a park.
Yeah, we can all understand that there are animations and comics and games where Boba Fett is a much more fleshed out character, but the average viewer of Book of Boba Fett is not going to be familiar with most of that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so that's, and that's why my point of reference is the movies alone. And so I look back at, you know, the Attack of the Clones. And I'm like, yeah, Jango Fett's a character in that. I mean, he's a side character and doesn't really get fleshed out, but he's a character. And then I compare that, you know, to Empire and Return of the Jedi. And it's like, the man is a suit and a pratfall. Like, And if you love that, that's fine. You know, like if you're a diehard Boba Fett fan, good for you. I'm just saying, like, as an artist, I'm looking at the performance and I'm going like, so he's green Jango Fett? Okay, I mean, that's fine.
They never got to do much with him in this show. In the show, he's just a kid that desperately wants revenge on Mace Windu, but is also a kid that's trying to deal with that, you know. I want to murder a man because he murdered my father, and they never got to do much with it, but that even could have been interesting. Like, they kind of hinted at that as like, he has some trauma. Like, yeah, he was raised by bounty hunters. He watched his father murder in front of him.
That's but I think a key, yeah, but I think a key point of what Seth is saying is that while he is basically a suit of armor and a pratfall, there are a couple things, little things that you pick up on that do inform his character. They're just small things. And well, I totally agree that this is like a, we're dangerously close to a side of the fandom and a side of arguments that I despise.
Yes, but, yes.
but I'm just pointing out that, like, I think about lines like, what about me? If he's worth a lot to me, I don't get paid if he dies or something like that. And it's just like lines like that give us a little bit of insight into how he thinks. And that's why when I say he was a ruthless bounty hunter, yeah, he didn't have very much to showcase it, but what little there was enforced that characterization.
Well, so the fact that his whole plan is encase this dude in carbonite just to see if it works, because like it's kind of made reference to the fact that nobody does this. Nobody puts people in carbonite. And that's cold. That's real cold bounty hunter shit. And that's not anywhere in the Book of Boba Fett. He is not cold.
Like, if you want to do him, okay, he's breaking good. Show him being drawn back to those old ruthless tendencies and stopping himself.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I brought up The Sopranos, because we live in a golden age of anti-heroes. Tony Soprano paved the way for Walter White and Dexter Morgan and characters like that, and Boba Fett is literally a character who just screams, play off those ideas with me, and
yep.
They didn't at all.
No, they felt like they were locked in a decision between, okay, do we appeal to the people that love this character and have this mythos built about him, or do we try and build something new? And it felt like they landed smack dab in the middle, twiddling their thumbs going, well, what do we do, guys?
can I, I want to add a quick, this is just a nitpick, and I don't expect anyone else to have this problem, but the final episode of Book of Boba Fett, I literally was sitting there at one point, and I tweeted out, this action set piece is going on too long. And I looked at the timestamp, and I still had half the episode left. And don't get me wrong, I love seeing the Rancor fuck shit up, but I was like, how long are we going to watch people poke around corners and shoot a blaster at something?
You know, it's funny you say that, because immediately as the show ended, especially after episodes 5 and 6 striking me the way that they did, I wanted to re-edit Book of Boba Fett into a movie. I was like, well, if you're going to fuck off for 2 whole episodes and do The Mandalorian, you should have just done a movie. Let's be honest.
I was thinking you edit all the Dances of Tuskens into one continuous stream. You don't cut back and forth.
Yeah,
have that run continuously.
So I put it in timeline order initially when I was cutting it together. But the issue with the show and the issue with fan editing is that you're locked, right? Like, there's no, unless I can find extra footage, you're locked with what you have. And the Dances with Wolves stuff is really easy to shorten and edit down. There's a ton of it, and it's just reintroducing the same idea a bunch of times. But then when you get into, once they're in Mos Eisley, every scene informs the next scene, so cutting things out makes it very, very difficult when you're in that section. So what I ended up doing, to your point, Axel, I ended up cutting the last episode down to about 20 minutes.
And that sounds pleasant to me. I'm the kind of person, the last few years I've realized, when I go see a movie, if the movie is longer than 90 minutes, it better justify itself to me, because I feel the length of a movie now.
Yeah, and really what I did was the initial part of the fight when it's just the two of them walking out in the street, that whole sequence is gone. And it just starts off from the super droid because that's...
Those are so awesome.
They were so awesome. Thank you.
And again, it's something we haven't seen, which is where this whole Star Wars Disney project is kind of stumbling for me, is it just keeps repeating itself in shit I've already seen.
Yes, yes.
You either need to lean in to, you have a new trilogy, build that out, play around in this kind of, you know, murky post-Empire period, or go back and have fun in Clone Wars, because that's a literal fucking decades-long war that you've only scratched the surface on, and you've just mined beloved characters out of. It has a bunch of people that, I want more Clone Wars, okay? I want it from different perspectives.
Well, you know, geez, I keep having these thoughts where, like, I don't want to bring them up because I know the worst conversations can come from them, but I know they're not going to come from you guys. It's just that I've heard these ones.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, literally, we're talking about this, and one of my first thoughts I'm thinking is, I wish they would do what Star Trek is currently doing, where Star Trek has seemed to recognize that they have a really interesting universe, and so they're doing different genres of stuff in them.
That's Star Wars.
Yes.
That's what they should be doing. This is the, what works about Boba Fett is, it's, hey, let's go play in Star Wars for half an hour this week. And I love that. And that's kind of what got me through the slower episodes. Is Star Wars is a fun universe. Go play in it. But stop giving me the same shit over and over again.
What would be two interesting basic examples? Give us one, a comedy, a straight comedy.
Just about to say that we have been, and that's why I'm so pissed about the way Solo turned out too. Because this is just going back to the same things we've already talked about. They got rid of Lord and Miller because they were doing comedy and weird and different, and that's what they wanted to do in this universe, and Star Wars said, no, 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 you have to adhere to exactly what we did, and it's all of Han Solo's lines that are going to become the plot of this movie. That's all you're allowed to do. And just,
yeah, but Star Wars has always been funny, and even in Book of Boba Fett and Mando, we have the mechanic who is hilarious.
Exactly!
So you could easily give us a show about, I don't know, some droids who or on a station somewhere that's just basically like a sitcom of them working in the... Oh. Like, you could do that. Or, on the other side, I would totally love, like, a, what was that show that was on Netflix that was Kevin Spacey before we all realized he was terrible?
Oh, House of Cards.
House of Cards.
Yeah, like a House of Cards show that either takes place in the Galactic Republic or, hell, even in the New Republic.
That was Guillermo del Toro's Attila, or not Attila the Hutt. Jabba the Hutt. that was like rumored his series he wanted to do. He wanted to do a crime lord series focused on Jabba that was going to be like the Sopranos in space.
Damn. But the point is that you could do something like House of... There's so many instances where you could do like a straight political drama that doesn't have any of the crazy action stuff and could be interesting. You could also do a comedy. You could do... What about...
Horror. Hey,
Boba Fett has introduced the idea that X-Wing pilots are essentially cops. So why not literally just a buddy cop...
Like Gina Carano decided to be a Nazi.
Exactly. Right. But the point is we could totally have like just like a lethal weapon or even a procedural. Imagine the insanity of like a procedural that takes place in Star Wars.
In Coruscant,
is you look right across the lot and you see Marvel doing, let's try this flavor of movie. Let's try this flavor of movie. And Star Wars is over here going, no, we have to adhere to the formula that we've adhered to forever. Because people on the internet say no one likes the prequels.
And it's funny because Mandalorian, right, decided to go hard into the Western aspect, which, don't get me wrong, that's baked into what Star Wars has always been. Sure. You could argue that a lot of what was missing in the prequels is that kind of Western feel. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I do think it's part of it. So, and I like that Mandalorian has gone into it, but then when Book of Boba Fett started doing it as well, and now it's like, okay, now are you too locked into this Western feel?
Yeah.
You can do other genres.
I have been pitching, actually, I wrote the first two episodes of a Cheers knockoff where Dexter...
In a cantina?
Dexter Jetster's diner. And Salacious Crumb is a pop-up character.
Oh, God.
And it's just, and it's all aliens. There's not a single human in all of it. Because I was like, fuck humans. I don't care about them in Star Wars. I want to know about aliens. And so I just had a ton of fun, like, going through Wikipedia and, like, you know, just kind of turning things into little bit jokes that are fun for the super Star Wars nerds. And, dude, it would be cheap and easy. Cheers was one location, you know? Like... Just spend all the money on really cool costumes and really good writers and do a comedy.
Well, that's what I mean when I say that, like, I'm amazed at what Star Trek is doing right now, because whether you like or not, because I totally understand some fans not, like, I'm not into Picard because I think Picard got too serialized and kind of, it doesn't work for me. But, like, I look at Lower Decks, for instance, and yeah, Lower Decks is aping off of Rick and Morty too much. But the fact that it's an official Star Trek property that does... constantly takes the piss out of itself.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. And Star Wars should have the confidence to be able to do something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, Star Wars is kind of being held hostage by a very vocal minority of its fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
same with the DCEU, for that matter.
Yes. Just look at the reactions to Peacemakers. Like, they're doing something different than we've already established. How dare they?
I saw somebody say that they were mad that he made Aquaman say fuck you, and I was like, that's the best part.
I don't know what they want.
Also, I like watching Peacemaker, literally that scene at the beginning where the one guy's like, Aquaman's a hero, and he goes like, fuck Aquaman, or he says something like, Aquaman fucks fishes or something
Aquaman
like that.
Fucks fish. Yep.
I literally was like, well, the boys made this joke, but it's way funnier coming out of John Cena.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I actually, let me share this with you guys. They just put out the full gag reel for Peacemaker.
Yep.
John Cena is one of the funniest people alive.
Yep.
No. I will say watching it, I have more so disagree with something Ulrich has said a bit, where I feel like John Cena is and Channing Tatum are very different. I love what John Cena is doing, and I like John Cena more, but the more I watch Peacemaker, the more I'm like, they are doing something very different. John Cena, I think, wouldn't be appropriate for something like 21 Jump Street. So
I'm saying, in a world where we have John Cena, we no longer need Channing Tatum.
And I used to kind of get where you're coming from. I'm just saying I don't really agree with it anymore.
This is Seth's theory of you can replace Chris Pratt with Jack Black and nothing will change. This is my version of that.
I totally get what you're saying. The only reason I disagree is because anything Channing Tatum has done that is not like major mainstream big budget shit, he's amazing. Like every time he works with Soderbergh, the kid is on fire. And so I really have a hard time hating him, but then I see him in like big stuff and I'm like, dude, you are so void of charisma. What is happening?
Yes.
Yeah. But the important thing,
I don't think he's funny. I don't think he's likable. John Cena is both of those. We can just put him in all the roles we have bookmarked for him.
Well, that's why I'm saying that the more I watch it, the more I feel like they really are different skill sets. So, but that's another conversation of the time. My point of bringing this up.
One is a skill set, one isn't.
So who is John Cena going to be in Star Wars is the question.
Oh, that's the real question, yeah.
But, John Cena would be like a sick bounty hunter.
But my point I was trying to get to with that is that we mentioned how I wasn't aware there was pushback against Peacemaker. But
Snyder brought out in force against anything that doesn't have Snyder's seal on it.
Well, and it's the violent minority of the Snyder cult too. It is an even smaller group that hates Peacemaker, but they're being extra loud because nobody's listening to them everyone's like, no, you're kind of wrong on this one. This is hilarious.
Now I will fully admit
that doesn't like it because he is omnisexual and they don't like that.
Those people can kick rocks.
Yeah.
I will fully admit that I'm not saying that my perspective should be the perspective. Like, if there, we can have some DC, like, let me put it this way. I despise overly edgy material in general. Yep. It always feels like it's trying too hard. There's the classic 90s comic situation. Like, I watched, I read, was it Death in the Family? Where Joker with his ripped off face pretends that he ripped off the faces of all the other Bat family, and I don't know, it just, everything about it just screamed of trying too hard to seem
you're
like
an adult and you recognize this is the work of a teenager.
Now I'm not saying that there isn't a place for that. Like, you can have I'm saying that when you have something as expansive as Star Wars or DC or Marvel, you shouldn't be limited in any way to any one kind of tone.
Exactly. And so the fact that
Peacemaker can literally, like, in its second scene, be like, oh yeah, Aquaman fucks fish. Like, I mean, no one's going to say that to Jason Momoa's face, or Jason Momoa Aquaman's face, but the fact that we can have a universe where a official character is saying this kind of thing and taking the piss out of it is just proof of how robust your IP is. And
yeah, exactly.
Lean into that.
Exactly.
I figured out who John Cena should play in a Star Wars. He's going to be an Imperial deck officer that's pointing out all the flaws in Imperial engineering.
Oh, okay.
Because I can totally see him, you know, just he's got that kind of quick, snappy wit. Like, guys, what the hell is up with these ships? We can't see what's underneath us. And or he can go, yeah, I know about the exhaust port on the Death Star. I think it's a bigger problem that we have a giant space laser that moves incredibly slowly and doesn't have shields.
So real quick to get back to basics here. I've spent a lot of time mostly criticizing Book of Boba Fett, but I want to say, since it's talking about the state of Star Wars, I enjoyed it just fine. I enjoy Mandalorian. Yeah. In fact, some of the Mandalorian I honestly really love. It never was something, though, that I felt like I really wanted to come back to, and part of me feels like that's definitely more on me, because Star Wars has become a thing where I've always said Star Wars is something that you should engage with even if you don't like it, because it's a cultural touchstone. It's such an inherent part of our pop culture landscape. You kind of have to know what's going on in it. At the same time, I'm so sick of what has been the Star Wars setting, which is probably why I'm like, give me different, very different takes on the Star Wars setting to keep me invested.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not like they're going to run out of money at any point. You know what I mean? Like, the issues here are, like, aren't oversaturation. We've proved that there's no such thing really as, you know, your superhero or I guess we should call it big IP fatigue is what it's turned into.
Yeah, like, contrary to critics, there's... No, superhero fatigue isn't a thing. Star Wars fatigue is not a thing.
Well, and like it's a case by case. Like, I get fatigued by this stuff, but it's not a constant state of the economy of making these shits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Clarification: when I say it's not a thing, it can be a thing for you individually.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not a thing on a populist scale.
How, like, Spider-Man: No Way Home is now the third highest grossing movie of all time?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nobody's burnt out on superheroes, and especially...
No, the world sucks. People want to see big explosions. They're not interested in long, melancholic, you know, introspective rants.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's the most frustrating part to me is, like, we should be getting, you know, one to two mainline Star Wars movies, one being, you know, your tentpole, the other one being a fun genre shift in a different part of the universe or time period. We should be getting three or four series a year. Like, there's no, they could be making cheap, they could open a Star Wars Blumhouse studio with, like, $1 million movies or, you know, like, cheap streaming series. There's nothing stopping him from doing this except for this adherence to, well, then we can't control what they're doing over there, and what if they do things that aren't as Star Wars as we like it to be?
Yeah. And it seemed like they were flirting with that direction.
Yeah.
When they were doing the new trilogy, they were doing like, oh, here's one main movie, here's one side movie. And then Solo underperformed, and they've gotten major cold feet on the concept, which is, again, not, it's really too bad, because while I didn't care for Solo, like, I thought that doing those kind of things literally was, as you're saying, go further. You're not going far enough.
Exactly.
Yeah, so. The issue about Rogue One, a lot of people still talk about that one being, it was something different, and yep, the third act is incredible,
yep,
and it's like nothing we've ever seen in Star Wars before.
I can still vividly remember the day that I went to see it in theaters and just thinking like, wow, this isn't shot like Star Wars, but it's got all the same shit in it. And this isn't acted like Star Wars, but it's got all the same, you know, like iconography that I recognize. Like, I was really drawn in by how different it could feel. The shots of, Hannibal, what's his name in real life?
Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen. The shots of Mads Mikkelsen on his like dreary green planet are gorgeous and real. Like, they're not green screen. Those are real shots. And so, yeah, so like anytime they do stuff like that, fans jump, and then they give us a Solo, and it's like, why are you trying to do a Marvel movie, and why are you so bad at this? You own Marvel.
Yeah, but you know
here's
what?
The thing
like
about
again,
Star Wars is its biggest advantage of nothing looks like Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's kind of where the new trilogy fails, of it didn't create its own unique style for that era. But still, if you see Star Wars, you know it's Star Wars, which is, and it's like Batman. People will go see it just because they know it.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
Do something with it.
Yeah. Sidebar, if you're a fan of Mads Mikkelsen and you haven't seen The Hunt, correct that. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
So
really, anything he's done in the last 5 years has been just incredible.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, how was I was about to go in this direction, and then I completely lost it with what Ulrich was saying about aesthetics and stuff. Oh, I remember now. All right, so there's this idea about I don't know what the right terminology is. Maybe it's IP, like losing, weakening of IP, or IP saturation, or I don't know. I've heard it as like a CEO set of buzzwords, where it's like, all right, we have to keep our IP strong.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? In my experience, and which admittedly is a very personal experience, I'm not claiming to be some business CEO with degrees and this stuff. But when I look at something like Warhammer, which I'm a huge fan of, I find that Warhammer was at their one of their best decisions was when they were just giving their IP to basically any video game company that could pay the fee for it, and were like, go make stuff. And yeah, there was plenty of bad stuff, but then there were plenty of good stuff too.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like when you've got something, especially as culturally touchstony as Star Wars, I would rather see that approach. I would rather be like, yeah, keep making, give your IP to someone like Taika Waititi,
yes,
and see what he's going to do with it. And he did one of the Mandalorian episodes, the last one in season one, and it was hilarious just to see the two troopers talk the way they do. And like, be experimental. Yeah, you'll get bad stuff, and it will happen, but you'll also get like really out there good stuff, and not everything has to be super expensive, as Seth said. Make some cheap stuff. Just, your IP will flow, and as Ulrich said, people will come to it. It's Star Wars.
I mean, how many failed shows has Disney Plus put out now? Like, there's the Turner and Hooch show. There's been a couple, like, they just, these money pits that no one watched that Disney still greenlit because they need content. Do that with Star Wars. You're going to get a return.
You're going to get a return, and you're going to get a huge resurgence with new people as they reinterpret how Star Wars affects them. Because, like, I think the three of us come from the same kind of Star Wars background, which was, like, pre-internet, you know, getting into, like, books and comics and things along those lines. So, like, we end up having very similar interactions with the IP. But now with, like, social media and the internet and TikTok and things like that, like, there's a whole breadth of people that, like, know Star Wars exists but just haven't interacted with it because Star Wars isn't asking them to interact with it. Star Wars is saying, oh, if you like Star Wars, you should sit with us, But you have to know what Star Wars is to like it, and it's one of those like catch-22s. They can't bring anybody new in unless they stop and go, oh yeah, so we should make Star Wars for this group of people and bring them in to see how they would interact with it. And that's really interesting to me, and gives me a lot of optimism for where we're headed if we start to get people thinking that way in Star Wars and going like, yeah, so our adherence to making like a trilogy of movies like this big event thing, that can still happen with other content, can't it? Yeah, I guess it can.
At risk of yet another terrible conversation piece, an example of I think what you're talking about that I would love to see is, again, whatever your feelings on the current state of it, Doctor Who is a great example of this kind of concept where, generally speaking, in the Doctor Who fandom, there is the Doctor that pulled you in. And a lot of times different showrunners, and thus different Doctors, have extremely different vibes and feels, despite the fact that this is one show with one, you know, through line of ideas.
Right.
So, similar thing, if you're casting a net that isn't not what I'm going to call the Independence Day net, where you just make everything so general that anyone can apply to it. Not to disparage Independence Day, it actually works for a lot of reasons. But yeah. Instead, making a bunch of targeted, like, hey, I really only need a show, one show, to get this group of people. So this show cannot appeal to everyone else, but if it appeals to this group that wouldn't otherwise engage with our property, this brings them in, and now they'll expand out to the other stuff.
Right.
So, yeah.
Fandoms are clubs now. Like, this is what we did in school. This is, you know, how we... I'm fucking covered in tattoos of shit like this, just so people can, like, quickly and easily identify what they can talk to me about if they want to talk to me.
I've only got one tattoo, and it's from Berserk, so I can empathize with that at least.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, like... and that's, you know, my very first tattoo was a Star Wars tattoo. I got the Return of the Jedi Death Star on my foot. Like, that, it's always going to be part of it. But specifically because I have nephews that are of the age that they're interested in this stuff. And Ulrich, you have a new kid, right?
I have a toddler.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, this is something that you'll get to experience, I guess, as things go along, too, if this is something you introduce them to, but the idea that you can bring in a whole new generation, you know, it's the last shot of Last Jedi, it's the new kid holding the broom, you know.
I have been debating what's the best way to introduce her to Star Wars. Like, where do I start? What's going to be the hook? What is she going to be most interested in?
Exactly.
Honestly, Ulrich, I mean, you're a parent and I'm not, so I'm not going to claim to have more knowledge about this, but I get the impression that if you show her the originals early, before she has a context for things looking old,
yeah.
You're going to be better. So,
no, she needs a big action set piece or she's not going to click. She wants to see violence.
I mean, Star Wars literally begins with a big action set piece.
No, so, that's a slow crawl. That's not what I'm... She needs bodies.
Literally the first scene of A New Hope is bodies. Well, what are you talking about?
You're right. That might actually do it. I forgot the boarding scene.
Do you guys want to know something hilarious about me and how I got introduced to Star Wars as a kid?
How'd you get introduced to Star Wars as a kid?
The Ewok adventure.
So, fun fact. My dad loves Star Wars and loves those movies, so we watched those growing up. I think I knew what that was before I really had a firm grasp of Star Wars.
No, same thing for me. I think Star Wars is one of a handful of things, along with like Godzilla and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that I cannot point down being introduced to it. I think they were exposed to me before I started being able to form memories.
Yeah.
So much so that they have just always been a part of who I am. So when I was a kid, when I was in probably middle school, I would do a thing where, like, one Sunday a month, I would do the 13-hour marathon of prequels through original. Nowadays, that idea makes me rich, mostly because it's just that long. But I did that a number of times, so I had my heavy connection to it. So, sidebar, Ulrich has sent me a video of his daughter being really into Encanto, and it's really adorable watching like a child that young form what is very obviously going to be a foundational attachment to a piece of media.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. anything Encanto. She had to watch the honest trailer for Encanto today because she just saw Encanto and had to watch that. No context what the jokes are, but she had to watch it because it was Encanto. I'm like, oh, this is in now. Okay.
Well, and it's funny too. Like, this is when I got into editing, as I was going back through it with my therapist, oddly enough, and we were talking about specifically, like, you know, formative memories and why we like to do those kinds of things as a kid, and it's because our brains don't understand editing. So it is things we recognize in a brand new context. You could literally just cut up a movie out of order and like throw it in front of a kid, and they would get stoked that it's the same thing but new. And I've always loved that idea of editing, that like when you're editing, you're capable of creating an entirely new thing, sometimes it not even making sense, and it could still hit.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how long we were planning to go, but I wanted to at the very least say, on top of all this conversation, that while Star Wars is not nearly as high in my estimations as it once was, literally I got a lot more into different science fictions and space fantasies. I read the Lensman series when I was in high school, which basically completely recontextualized how I viewed Star Wars. And now it's not something I seek out. I probably wouldn't have watched these anytime soon if not for this recording. I'm glad I did. I enjoyed them. But that's the important thing. I think Star Wars, I still believe, even after all of this and after all of the horrible fandom conversations, I hesitate to say anything specific with the fans, but let's just say some of the conversations are nightmare.
Yeah.
I still believe Star Wars is like top echelon, literally the top echelon of pop cultural touchstones.
Yeah.
Of when a piece of popularly engaged with art actually impacts and molds your culture and your society. And because I think Star Wars is so important, is exactly why I think that the people who are in control of it need to ease up a bit and be more experimental with it.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It deserves that. It deserves the chance for new, young, weird artists to do things with it.
Yeah, it's yeah. Literally stood the test of time. This is exactly the time to be able to proudly do that kind of stuff too. Like, being trepidatious about it, I don't understand that for this kind of a series. It's like, it's Star Wars. You can put it on a fucking mug and someone will buy it for three times the price. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, the best thing to happen to Star Wars was that lull period when they handed it to Filoni and it's like, hey, George has some ideas. See if you can, you know, make them into something. And created the Clone Wars, which brought a whole new generation into Star Wars.
Right.
And retroactively made the prequels better.
Yeah.
And now he's kind of going on. It's like, well, I had some other ideas. And they're like, okay, take the guy from Iron Man and a budget and go create some new stuff. So yeah, when their hands off the wheel, they do fine, which is, I think that's the failing of Boba Fett, is you look at Mando, that was hand off the wheel.
Yeah.
Now hands back on the wheel, and you look at Boba Fett, and you're like, this isn't working as well.
You guys ready for my monkey's paw wish real quick?
Oh, God, okay.
So I, again, not a huge fan of Clone Wars. I watched some Clone Wars. I watched some Rebels. I think we really need, because I didn't get it with Boba Fett. There's another character who is an extremely popular, underutilized character that could do the same thing, but actually follow through on being like a Tony Soprano-like story. And they've already hinted at doing it. So follow through on Darth Maul.
Yes.
I was honestly shocked that he didn't get referenced or brought up, especially with the Syndicate stuff from Solo.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was shocked. Like, I was shocked he wasn't involved. When they said that there was a syndicate coming to Tatooine, I think in episode 4 or 5, I was like, oh shit, is Darth Maul going to show up? And he didn't.
I know the answer if to you, that one, though.
That's why I say it's a monkey's paw, because Darth Maul is such an obvious... It's the same thing with Boba Fett in a lot of ways. But as someone who knows his story in Rebels, which is, you know, an official story, it's like... This is literally your coolest character from the prequels with the great design, who has force but is also evil, running a mafia organization. Like,
this is a great opportunity to do what we are literally saying they could have done with Boba Fett. I don't believe it's going to happen, which is why I call it a wish. But
yeah, that's the other thing that I'm maybe a little disappointed with the direction of things that have been announced so far is they're really doubling down on the crime thing, and I don't think that is necessary for Star Wars to work. Like, you know, the Mandalorian is based around picking up and, you know, disposing of criminals as a bounty hunter. Boba Fett is about taking over a thing. Andor is going to be about, I'm sure, spy shit and, you know, political criminal dealings. And, like, I guess I'm more excited for something like Ahsoka, which is, you know, kind of, you know, politically driven war stuff. And, you know, like, shooting closer to the Star Wars of Star Wars. I guess I'd like a little break from the crime stuff. Not to say I don't it ever, but, you know, just bounce back and forth between the tones a little bit.
Did you watch the YouTube series Troopers by College Humor?
No.
So this was a lot. This was like 12 years ago or something. Yeah, but it was literally a mini series of like 5 to 8 minute episodes that was definitely not Star Wars, quote unquote, that was about two definitely not stormtroopers working on the definitely not the Death Star. And they're just friends and they deal with situations with definitely not Darth Vader. and it was really funny. And that scene with that in the one episode of Mando that Taika Waititi did was like, wow, this is pulling a lot of the same feelings that erupted from watching Troopers.
Yeah.
And that's the same kind of thing where it's like, you could make a show that takes place during the Empire about just a group of like troopers working on a Star Destroyer somewhere and just have it be funny. Yeah, they're evil. We know that as an audience, but also maybe these guys are just, they're just part of this and they're trying to find what happiness they can with each other's friendship.
It's going back and forth. Like, I do want a deeper exploration of the Empire and stormtroopers because I think there's a lot of, you know, interesting stuff to be mined, but in the current era with our current Nazi problem, like, let's not sympathize evil empires.
I accept that.
Like, I go back and forth. Like, I really want a good, compelling evil empire story. I'm tired of the evil empire is secretly incompetent. I'm so fucking tired of it. But also, it's like, yeah, we're having to convince people that the Nazis were the bad guys unequivocally again. Maybe the audience isn't ready for that.
Yeah, unfortunately. And it's funny you say that, too, because, like, I feel like I just watched rewatched Clerks recently, and I feel like Kevin Smith's Clerks scene about, you know, the ethics of Star Wars is unintentionally becoming exactly what I want out of Star Wars. Like, I would really love to see, you know, like a contractor, like around the Nazi
construction
guys.
Crew.
Yeah, like they're aware that these are the Nazi guys, but it's like, hey, I mean, I don't make money. Or even worse, they could be slaves too. Like, who knows? The Empire used slaves.
What I'm hoping Andor kind of gets into. They did a little bit in that Rogue One where they didn't humanize the Empire, but they kind of go like, yeah, the rebellion wasn't clean-handed as, you know, they'd let you believe, because rebellions are never clean.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so I'd love something along those lines. And wouldn't that be just so funny for Kevin Smith to just come full circle and write something into Star Wars by accident?
Well, again, Seth, if you have a moment, I haven't looked him up in literally years, but go on YouTube, find some of those old Trooper videos, and you'll get what I mean.
Yeah, I get the feeling they're going to kind of tickle my pickle.
It's just called Troopers. That's all.
Yeah. But yeah, I think just to bring it home, I know there's got to be at least a couple people that are screaming listening to this episode right now. Yes.
Oh, certainly.
I did watch Star Wars Visions. Yes, that is exactly the kind of stuff that I want Star Wars to do. Unfortunately, it is not the rule, and it is the exception. So for all the Visions fans out there, I promised I would bring it up, and I do. I think it's excellent. Like, I there's some of them that I thought were dorky and not very cool, and there were some of them that made me shit myself in their coolness. And yeah.
Out of curiosity, Oryk, do you even know what he's talking about?
Yeah, I watched The Duel and then lost all interest.
Okay. All right, just because Oryk has a very vehement native reaction to anime, and only very specific anime can overcome it. We are, for instance, going through Cowboy Bebop right now for a reason.
Oh.
So, but anyway, Star Wars Visions, which I have not watched, but have heard basically universal praise for. So I was just curious.
Yeah, watch The Duel. The Duel is awesome. Everything else was, just, no.
Yeah, there was some stuff that, like, I really liked the Astro Boy episode. That was just, I love that animation style, and it's so like soft and comfy that and especially since they made it about like growing plants in life, I was like, oh man, Miyazaki vibes the whole way through. I was really digging that one. And then, the one about the band, that shit. Like, yes, there's bands in Star Wars. They put one in, like, every canteen scene. The fact that we got to follow one was awesome. My only complaint is that they had to put fucking lightsabers in it for some reason.
Ooh, new idea. This is Spinal Tap, but with a droid band. Sorry, yeah, anyway.
No, I mean, I'm totally here for it. I would love the idea that, like, droids make music, but, like, don't understand the art of creativity. That's hilarious to me.
All right, I think Seth and I both had good concluding statements. Or did you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'll just, you know, put my wish out into the universe since we're all one. I want a Band of Brothers style miniseries about a group of clones during the Clone Wars.
Isn't that what the Bad Batch is?
I was just saying, that sounds like the Bad Batch.
The Bad Batch is kind of that kind of showing the transition from Republic to Empire, which is really interesting.
Oh.
Like, it's really kind of cool to see, because it's literally what happened to the clones between this. How did people react to the transition from Empire to, you know, Republic to Empire? It kind of starts slow, but it gets really good. But I just want, like, something set in the Clone Wars that gets to, you know, broaden out. Because my biggest problem with Bad Batch, a lot of people, is the character names tell you everything there is to know about the characters. Like, the guy named Wrecker is the big heavy, and that's all he is.
I have heard that Dee Bradley Baker kills it in
that
series.
Dee Bradley Baker is fucking amazing. And again, it's Filoni having fun with what Filoni loves. Filoni loves the Clone Wars, and he's just getting to play around in that some more.
Yeah, and, like, good for him. I really never want to rain on his parade, because I think he might be the truest Star Wars fan.
He's just, like, a big, happy nerd.
Yeah.
He loves this, and he loves everything about it. I don't think he hates, like, anything of Star Wars.
And that's a philosophy I've tried to adopt over the years, because I used to hate Star Wars. I used to even just for fun play devil's advocate and take down the original trilogy when people would geek out about it too much. I was terrible to be around as a teenager, just to let you know.
It's okay. I was literally all of us have done that. Been terrible to be around as teenagers at a point.
I was no fun. But yeah, I now I've tried to adopt that, and that really
my
tied
terribleness
into
was
my,
about
my
music,
experience with
for the record.
Say that again.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just saying, my terribleness was about music, for the record.
Oh, mine too. Dude, everything that I enjoyed. I couldn't enjoy something unless someone was actively not enjoying it.
Yeah, sorry, continue.
Yeah, and that has really painted my experience with Star Wars lately, and why I can approach Book of Boba Fett and fall in love with the warts, and why I watch Mandalorian and get so stoked when you have these, like, little away episodes with no dialogue where they're just, you know, doing really fun stuff. I dig all of that.
I definitely have more that I would like to talk to you about Mandalorian specific, but another time.
Yeah,
more
well,
reason to talk to you later.
Let's save that for Mandalorian season 3, and then we'll sweep through and do a deep dive on that one. How about that?
Sounds great.
I'm down for that.
Well, thank you both for being here. I obviously at the beginning and end of this, you'll hear your shout outs for your stuff. But if you'd like to let people know where they can check you out online, feel free to do so now.
Just search Geeks with Shields at anything. That is the banner in which we put all our podcasts. In case the name doesn't describe it, we are a geeky, nerdy podcast. We use the terms geeky and nerdy very liberally to basically talk about whatever we want. We have two podcasts that operate underneath that banner. We have Geeks Who Hunt, which is our horror-themed podcast, and we have Geeks of Grimdark, which is our Warhammer-themed podcast. Anytime we want to talk about something and we can't kind of cram it under the broad banner, we just create a new podcast with the term geek in it somewhere.
And generally speaking, my brother and I here, we're, I like to think we're pretty reasonable, personable guys. We get a lot of guests on. Here's, which is what I was getting to. I did have recently a friend of mine point out that he's never seen a content creator's most ardent person making fun of them be their co-host, except for me. So I wonder what that has to say about us. But if you enjoyed listening to us talk with Seth, you'll probably enjoy us talking with each other or any of our other people we talk to.
Sounds good. I want to leave this episode cautiously optimistic for the state of Star Wars, but guys, I think we all agree. Let's get a little creative with it. Let's get crazy.
Yeah, let's give me experimental. That's my key word. My wish word is I want experimental.
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Damn right.
I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.